closed captioned for the reality impaired. It's the Jerry Bader Show.
Get out of town. 906. I remember this story. I remember talking about this story. And I want to thank the listener who sent this update. Why do they make it so hard? Anyway. All right. There was a teacher, Janesville, former teacher. She was taken to the hospital and found to be drunk while on a school field trip in 2013. Go ahead, Earl. And as I recall, she was heavily intoxicated. You scroll down a little bit and you can click on the link, Earl. You had it there. Go a little more. 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 Right there. Whoops. Stop. Right here. Janesville Council approves $75,000 settlement for former teacher who was drunk on school trip. And I'm trying to refresh myself here is just how intoxicated she was. I thought she was heavily intoxicated. Janesville city leaders have voted to offer a $75,000 settlement to a former teacher who was taken to the hospital found to be drunk while on a school field trip in 2013. City council met last night and voted on a recommendation from the city attorney to pay Maria Kaya to settle a $5.5 million lawsuit her attorney filed last year, claiming the city mishandled the investigation into the incident and caused undue harm. Six of seven council members were present at the meeting, and all but one voted to approve the recommendation. In other words, make her go away for $75,000. Kaya's lawsuit claims the Janesville PD improperly released blood test results, saying it was confidential medical information. She was taken to the hospital by another staff member after she was found passed out in the bathroom of a bowling alley. That's why she was just three sheets to the wind. On the field trip in June 2013, 27 News reached out to Police Chief Dave Moore Monday, who said he was advised by city legal staff not to comment. City Attorney Wald Klimchick says in a memo to the council, the matter is being settled to avoid a cost of defense and the city will not admit liability in this incident. The money will come from the city's liability insurance fund. Blood alcohol contents of people arrested are commonly released, and I don't consider them to be confidential. This woman was plastered, overseeing children on a field trip. And this is the whole issue. You talk about litigious society and the need for tort reform. $75,000 to make it go away. Who's not going to sue? If the nuisance fee that you receive is worth the while, who's not going to sue? It would be interesting to see how much she gets and how much her attorney gets out of that. But that's rather interesting. But that's the, you know, yeah, I at 37.5, I don't know. Or are you suggesting that was her blood alcohol content? Oh. I kid. Now, then there's this. Talk about things being made public that you don't expect to be made public. An assistant professional football coach peeing into a cup on the sidelines. No, I don't think he had a test due. Redskins coach caught peeing into Gatorade cup by Lions fans in front rows. And the interesting thing is, the website that I found this on, one picture has a black, you know, whatever in front of his, you know, so you can't see what's going on. The other picture clearly shows him holding, you know, and peeing into the cup. I often wondered about players that suit up. All right, now you're all suited up and you're on the sidelines. What have you got to go? You got to hold it until halftime? And isn't he in a position as a coach that can he leave for a few minutes? Run into the tunnel and there it is, caught forever. He's peeing in public, saying that there apparently there's not going to be any punishment of any kind. Ah, good call. The Janesville teacher, that would be binge drinking. Yes. If you missed it, go to the podcast from yesterday. That in fact, would be binge drinking. In my opinion, binge drinking is, by definition, drinking alcohol as fast as you can to become intoxicated as fast as you can. That's my definition of binge drinking. And, visit Madison this weekend. I know binge drinking is a real problem on campus. Apparently, sometimes it's a problem in the classroom. She was on the job. Remember that. Anyway, I don't know what this dummy's excuse is. Now, speaking of football, on Thursday, I'll be interviewing Jeff Perlman, author of Brett Favre, Gunslinger. This is what I would call a warts and all biography. It's not Brett Favre with a halo, and it's not a hit job. It's what I think there's not enough of these days. Public figures get made into caricatures. Now, sometimes they do that to themselves. I think Donald Trump was somewhat guilty of that, but he's also, and Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, anyone in public office, this one-dimensional caricature type depiction or in the public spotlight, not just public office. I do think you get that, where we want to see them as hero or villain. Favre is neither in this book, but it is a full depiction of who and what he is. And it's chronological. It starts with his youth, growing up in Mississippi. One of the things that may be talked about is that his parents are pretty open for it being Mississippi in the late 60s, early 70s, racially. Brett had black friends. They appeared to be pretty open-minded about that. There's one page in the chapter on his childhood that I think is going to get a lot of attention. I want to read it to you. I am going to have some comments, and then I want your reaction. It deals with Irvin Favre's behavior as a father. And by the way, I will later in the week, and well, when I interview Perlman, but talk about what the book says about how he and Aaron Rodgers got off on the wrong foot, and a number of other things. But I want to read this one page to you, and I want you to think about things that have happened in the NFL in the past couple of years, and how perceptions on corporal punishment have changed over the decades. And I want your reaction. Here is the page. When asked which of the parents was softer, all of the Favre children cite their mom. Bonita, said Peterson, a family friend, was the mother hen. She would hug you, advise you, take you in, pray with you. She's a real down-to-earth woman, a saint. But even were Bonita a strict disciplinarian, it's not a hard battle to win. Compared to Irvin Favre, Suge Knight seems cuddly, which again might explain young Brett's propensity towards cruelty. Earlier in the chapter, he mentions Brett was kind of a cruel kid, the way he picked on his siblings. Although it has often been said that Irvin refused to tell his children he loved them, the characterization is misleading. The words, "I love you," were not deliberately avoided. They simply never entered his cranium, not toward his parents, not toward his wife, not toward his offspring. He was probably a little different with me because I was a girl, said Brandy, Brett's sister. But it'd be hard for my brothers to know Dad loved them. That's just fact. Love and affection were emotions never designed to be verbally expressed. One loved by giving maximum effort. One loved by molding his soft kids into stones. One loved by arriving on time, by putting in 9 hours of work, by making certain the bills were paid. To Irvin, Brandy was of little worth. Girls, in his mind, weren't athletes, and without athletics, what was the value of a person? My mom went to every dance recital, every event, everything I had, she said. But my dad had no interest in my activities, even if they were sports. He would come, not really by first choice. Looking back, it killed me. You want love? You're a kid. You need love. And he didn't offer it in a way a child needed it. Irvin ruled the household with a stern voice and a tendency toward violent resolution, and would beat the boys, and on occasion his daughter, with whatever appropriate item was closest. It could be a stick from the yard, or a belt, or a black rubber hose. Sometimes they'd be offered a choice, a thrashing, an inanimate object, or kneeling for a prolonged period on a rock pile. You take the rocks, said Brandy. Dad had this blue belt, and he would pop it before he'd hit us, just so we knew. That wop was wop love wop. One time, we were in the back of my dad's truck, and I was fighting with one of my cousins, and Dad told us to stop, said Brandy. Well, we flipped off the back of the truck while it was moving. I kept beating my cousin up on the ground, and Dad beat me from out there all the way until we were inside. He wasn't wearing a belt, so he used his hands and knees. And then you get what I've heard from others, and even I've done to a degree. Nostalgically looking back at what today is considered physical abuse. My favorite moment has to be the bike story, said Scott Favre. We were riding bikes down our road, which was gravel. Brett was 10, and the cuff on one of the legs of his blue jeans wound up caught in the chain of his Huffy. You know how many times it happened to me? I had an old Schwinn hand-me-down from my brother Mike, and it didn't have the chain guard. He pulled to the side of the road, bent down, and repeatedly tried to yank the pants loose. Irv approached in his pickup truck, and Brett yelled out for help. Dad, Dad, he said, get us home. Nope, Irv hollered, gotta go. He drove off, and Brett flipped the middle finger. Earl's trying to even imagine what comes next, knowing already what you know about Irvin Favre. All of a sudden, here comes the truck in reverse, said Scott. Brett's trying to run through the woods with the bike attached to his leg. I mean, he's limping along. It's really pathetic. He's trying to run from the old man with a bike caught to his leg. He had no chance. Irv stopped the truck, jumped out, grabbed his son's middle finger, and bent it backward. You think that was funny? Irv yelled. No, Daddy, I'm sorry. You're what? Irv said. I'm sorry, I'm sorry. You want to do that again? Irv said. You ever going to do that again? No, Brett whimpered, no. Irv released the finger and stormed off back to the truck, leaving Brett and his bicycle attached at the leg. Understand the tone of this, as it's presented by the Favre kids, is a fond nostalgia. Brett's relationship with Irv Favre has always been considered a big part of his success. And remember that Raiders game right after Irv had died, one of the greatest games Brett Favre has ever played. And I can't remember the coach's name right now, but for the Raiders, when he asked at halftime, what are you going to do to try to stop Brett Favre? I have no idea. And the receivers, I think, were coming up. There were a couple of balls he just threw up there, and the receivers went up and caught them. It's 2003, Earl. It just was a testament to the relationship he and Irv Favre had. Now, I think, and we'll see, maybe I'm wrong, as the book is more widely read, I think there's going to be a lot of commentary about should Irv Favre's image be changed? Bill Callahan, that's the coach. The relationship between Favre and his father, should it be remembered as fondly as it has been? And here's another question. Did that, and this, I think, is really an interesting question. Did that treatment at his father's hands build him into the guy that could start all the games he did with all the injuries he did? The story of his first action at Southern Miss, he wasn't hungover, he was still drunk, and he puked before going into the game. Actually, Earl, I know you think you're being funny. Did he play quarterback with a bike on his leg? He kind of did. I have told some stories fondly of my old man being pretty rough with me. But in this book, it sounds really, really, really vicious. I mean, cruel. Child abuse. But I find it interesting. The Favre kids remember it as formative and made them who they are today. Now, some people will say, look at all their track records. Brett, of course, had some personal issues, but for the most part, just is remembered for being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. The other kids had a number of issues. I don't have a specific question, which is always dangerous when you're trying to get calls, but I don't have a specific question. I'll just throw it out. Your initial reaction, knowing how that close bond, that relationship between Irvin and Brett Favre is largely credited for his success and largely credited for him going off the rails after Irv's death. 888-455-1360. It's 923, and in today's society, is it okay not to judge Irvin Favre for that behavior?
Follow Jerry on Twitter. Go to jerrybatershow.com.